Okay, open the meeting of the Policy Committee for today with just one paper to consider today. Any apologies? Currently got somebody out.
Councillor Deake is just out on. He'll be here shortly.
Yeah, not an apology.
No.
And yes, that's right. Tahu Portiki is an apology. So does somebody care to move that apology? Councillor Hope, seconded. Councillor Noon, all in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Can confirm the agenda. Nothing else to add at all? No? Okay. Conflicts of interest. Oh, sorry. Councillor Neil.
Madam Chair, if it's improper, given Tahu Portiki's health situation, that this committee sends this wishes.
Yes, thank you very much for noting that. We would all like to do that, so if you could pass that on, or perhaps I can channel that through, that would be great. So thanks for reminding us of that. Great.
Ask, Madam Chair, at this juncture, I'm sorry to hear. It would be nice to have another Ngāi Tahu representative. Is there a possibility of having an alternate until...
No, that's not on. Well, it's not probably something to discuss at this point, but it's not what we in the terms of reference to have an alternate wasn't there. But I think it's something that we wouldn't discuss right at this moment. It's a simple apology today. Thank you.
When are we going to discuss it, Madam Chair?
We've received an apology today for someone that can't be here. We can't suggest that somebody replaces that person or an alternate comes, because we don't have that in our standing orders for the committee that's set up. So, yeah, we could discuss it next triennium if we wanted to change that. Thank you. Right, conflicts of interest, any of them? No? Public forum, no public forum today, and the paper then. So an important paper today, and one that I know all of Otago will be paying attention to and listening to. This is, as we've articulated and through our four priorities, but saying that water is our number one priority. And the way that we manage water and plan for that in our water plan is really vital. So this is a chance for us to think about what our water plan actually says, and is it fit for the time we're in at the moment and planning towards the future as well. We're here today, purpose, to consider potential plan changes to strengthen the regional plan Water for Otago and support the coming full review of the plan. So purpose today on that. And I would like to open it up for discussion. But before we do that, I would really like perhaps if Andrew and perhaps your team here today, you could lead us through the paper and highlighting reasons for why we're here today and feedback you've received perhaps from key stakeholders today too.
Right. Thanks, Madam Chair. So I'll start just very briefly with a couple of introductory comments.
Yep.
What you have in front of you is a recommendation for essentially two plan changes in sequence, the first being a shift of date for effect in the permitted activity rules. It's described in detail, the schedules in 6A, and the underlying rationale for that is to arrive at a sensible response from our farming community to certain rules. The second component, which is really the stiffening up, and it's also progressing in a direction that's consistent with the MPSFM or a step towards it, is strengthening the water plan rules with a notification schedule for March 2020 and a process associated with that in terms of consultation. So we can probably take questions on our communication process, because there has been a fair round of communication ahead of this paper being in the public domain. We'd be happy to take questions on those, Madam Chair, and I'd like Sylvie, I guess, to do the core of the discussion here of the content of the paper, and Peter and I can assist as you go, Sylvie, as is necessary, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So this paper is about a sequence of plan changes that we're proposing to do in the next year.
first one in October and the second one in March. So you are well aware that through Plan Change 6A, which became operative in 2014, we introduced two rules which were to be operative or to come into force on the 1st of April 2020. So those two rules introduced discharge contaminant thresholds in Schedule 16 and nitrogen leaching limits as calculated by overseer. And since 2014, through our communication with stakeholders and the community and through our own scrutiny of those rules, serious implementation issues have come to light. Those two rules are quite ambiguous and uncertain, and they are very likely to result in a number of consents coming in the next few months so that farmers can have confidence that they have permission to discharge. We believe that having to issue multiple consents, discharge consents in the rural community, will actually undermine the full review of the water plan that we are initiating, is also contrary to the objective that we had through Plan Change 6A. So we are first proposing to delay the date by which those two rules come into force to be able to better prepare and to strengthen our rules and potentially review them before 2023, so they are more workable by that date. And the second plan change that we're proposing in March is to strengthen our rules and, as Andrew was saying, to go to be more aligned with the NPS and the national directions. So we have identified, and this paper goes into the detail of all the issues that we have identified through meeting with our compliance and stakeholder engagement teams. And we are proposing to do a plan change focusing mostly on strengthening effluent management rules, sediment from earthworks, and all our policies on discharge. Discharges to water and to land. We want to introduce new rules on stock access. Our rules are probably not strong enough. And we will also introduce a definition of regionally important infrastructure to clarify how we are protecting our regionally significant wetlands. In appendix to this paper, we have set out our communications and engagement plan. Because the first plan change needs to be notified very shortly, and we have to go through a number of steps through the RMA before then, we are proposing to limit ourselves to our consultation requirements under the RMA. And because the second plan change will have more substantive changes to our overall rule framework, we will do a much more active consultation and engagement with our community, first through two forums with main stakeholders, one on rural discharges and the other one on sediment, and then through public consultation before coming back to this to council for notification in March, April next year. Any question on...
Okay, I did have Councillor Woodhead had his hand up before, so...
Oh, it wasn't a specific...
Okay. Specific questions then before you wrap up at this point. Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just looking at the list of improvements for March 2020, so the second plan change, list on page 11... And under sediment control from earthworks activities, are you able just to clarify whether we're talking subdivision earthworks, are we talking rural earthworks associated with farming activities, or just where does that land? God, just reading that, I don't quite understand whether it covers both.
We are mostly targeting earthworks from subdivisions and development. They are a significant issue up in Queenstown Lakes and Central Otago and also on the Tyree. Usually in plans, there are rules around sediments from earthworks without necessarily saying what it's related for. But mostly the The conditions are also based on the scale of earthworks. So we are looking at larger scales probably, and we'll put our permission based also on the scale of the earthworks.
Would it be fair to say, though, that the second plan change, you would still be thinking about the scope of that? It won't be set in stone today.
Yes,
because we're going to be, for example, receiving a whole lot of national direction potentially, which may actually change our priorities for what that might look like too.
Yes.
So while it's an indication, there's still discussion to be had, isn't there, by a new council on what that would look like. Yep.
That's absolutely right. Mm. So not only is MFE looking at a new NPS, it's also looking at a new NES, which will probably set rules on a number of things, and we don't have the intention to duplicate the efforts that MFE is doing, so we will look at that. And also through our stakeholder engagement, other issue may come to the fore, and we will revise the scope if we think it's necessary and justified.
But following up, is it?
Madam Chair, and I accept this is an evolving process, and that's good. The other question I had was on page 3 of the communication. Well, it's called page 3, but it's actually second page of the communications and engagement plan. And if you head down to the fifth bullet point, where it says national approaches to regulation, blah, blah, blah. And the last part of that sentence has moved away from the approach that underpinned Plan Change 6A. It may be a question for Peter or Andrew, but are you able to expand? So if this was someone sitting out there in the community, for them to understand what it means by that language, because it's not completely clear what we're moving away from with 6A, and I assume if this affects based plan, so we need to elaborate.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm happy to answer that. And Sylvie and Peter, chip in if you think my answers needs a bit of clarification. The trend, particularly with, if you go to what you call diffuse source discharges from land, which is the complex issue that's being dealt with in 6A, the trend nationally is for regional councils to end up in a slightly more prescriptive place about practice on the land, and that translates in simple terms to things like requiring stock exclusion from waterways, requiring farm environmental management plans that have actions associated with them, and less, I guess, less trying to regulate by understanding exact movement of sediment or nutrients or whatever into the waterway. That's the trend, and that's what we're referring to, and that's consistent with the NPCFM.
Okay, yes, I've got a number of hands up, so I'll write that last one down. But first of all, Councillor Woodhead, then Lawton, Laws and Bowell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for a start off, before I make some comments on the actual paper, I'll just cover off some of the feedback we've had from some stakeholders. Mrs. Gardner and I met with the executive of Federated Farmers. Mr. Newman and I and a number of other staff were at the Manuhiri Care Reference Group. I think you were there too, Madam Chair. There's been a number of other conversations with stakeholders over the last week or 10 days, and the odd phone call. But on the whole, it's taken quite a bit of describing and understanding what it means. On the whole, though, they are supportive. Many of the stakeholders, particularly the farming end of the stakeholders, understand some of the challenges and we're supportive of, essentially giving some greater clarity and understanding the bigger picture that we're in, whether it's the national stuff coming down the chain or the water plan review that OIC is working its way through chapter by chapter. There was virtually every time we were talking with stakeholders, there was two questions. Firstly, what are, you know, is the water plan still in place? Is plan change 6A as it sits, the rural water quality standards still, you know, in place and in play? And obviously the answer to that is a very strong yes. And we want to ensure that landholders keep up the good work and the catchment groups that they're undertaking now, and prohibited activities are still there, the compliance activity as we have got it at the moment is still there, etc. So we're not walking away from anything. There's no softening of stance, and if anything, there'll probably be a stiffening of some of those processes, maybe with some as a result of some national direction. The other question that comes up almost every time is, are we walking away from the effects-based approach? And I think Mr. Newman's just essentially answered that. And my response has been, as far as I'm aware, from council perspective, no. But there is a movement in some parts of activities where there needs to be a tightening up of regulation, whether it's prescribing the amount of dairy effluent storage, etc. But the effects-based approach still sits there and underpins our water plan until it's decided otherwise, essentially. So that is certainly, and we're well aware that the farming community values the those principles and that underpin the current water plan. But a new water plan will look different to the current one we have. And it has to sit inside the national framework that we'll get clarity on in the coming months. So I think this is a logical process that we've got as a proposal in front of us on how to work forward. The detail of the March plan changes, as we've already heard, will need to be worked up. But having a number of consents potentially frustrating the planning process and putting both the landholders and council through processes that won't necessarily end us up in a good position longer term is just not sensible at all. So I support the what's put in front of us, and in fact, Madam Chair, I'm happy to move the recommendations. My last comment I'd make is, and it's slightly irrelevant in that it's looking towards March, but I just was looking through the proposal around sediment traps, and we're aware that the community's been asking for the ability to put these sorts of structures in place. And I wonder whether, and I'd be interested for staff to think about it as that part of the future plan changes are developed, whether we could actually widen that and look at wetland development as part of that too, rather than a tight sediment trap. I think there's some a bigger opportunity there, and that we just might need to have a think about. So happy to move the recommendations, Madam Chair.
Hey, do we have a seconder? Yep, Councillor Hope. And next two speakers, Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. As a governor, I'm a little bit ashamed of having to talk about these issues so far down the line. We've known about them for a long time, but I'm grateful to the team who've brought them to us and have done a good job at explaining the pros and cons, so well done. Glad to hear about the sediment rules for development. These aren't issues that are only affecting our own regulatory function, but actually the Queensland Lakes District Council has really struggled with this, so greatly appreciate that we are now also supporting them and their aims to improve their local regulatory work as well. I hear what Councillor Woodhead is saying with regard to our rural farming community being in favour of an effects-based plan. I hope that we, as decision makers, remain very open. Ultimately, what the Schedule 16 has shown is that it's incredibly difficult to measure some of these impacts. And if we can't measure it, we cannot regulate it. And So let's not start from there. Let's start on how do we ensure that we are protecting, enhancing or improving our environment, because that's our job. And let's take the community on that path. I'd like to open that discussion sooner rather than later with our community, because it is close to their hearts, and let's start calling it what it is, because the language entry that you brought up in the report is quite fluffy. It's kind of, let's call it what it is and start that conversation rolling. It's a really good plan because it's clear, which is what I like, which is why I'm advocating for even more clarity around our language. The other aspect is, you know, how do we protect our environment as we move through this process, and that's incredibly important. There's a lot of discussion in there about how we're going to continue to educate and advocate and try to, you know, bring through quite big changes like requirements for farm plans. So my question was really a bit more detail about how we're going to do that. We currently have 4 liaison team staff. Are we looking to include, you know, increase the numbers there? Or are we looking to have a different way of engaging with our community? Because it's going to be a big step change to turn turn our community's minds to looking at this in a different way, whilst ensuring that not just the people who this directly affects, but the entire community can be assured that we are actually continuing to protect our environment. Because at the moment, that's not what it looks like out in our community. It looks like we're stepping back and we're taking a do-nothing stance. Whereas what I'm hoping is that this council is actually moving into a proactive stance. So I'd love to just a bit more detail on how we are going to achieve that.
So perhaps I can comment in principle. I can't comment about the resourcing issue, but to deal with the effects issue, the reality is that the condition of the water body, the stream, the lake, the wetland, the river, in a measured sense, will be what it is. And I guess the evidence of poor water quality is there, which is, frankly, the effect, really. Then in turn, it becomes a question of, well, okay, if a given water body is in a poor state, it's within reasons. You can go back to the issues of source, of so forth, of farm management practice, might be urban practice, and identify the source. And the key thing is it's a matter of making sure you use an intervention, physical intervention in the landscape or on the farm system to deal with that. So I don't think it's a step away absolutely from the effect or the consequence, far from it. The second point I'd make, which is really important, I think, I'm not sure of the number of farms in Otago, but it might be in the order of...
3,000 or 4,000, is it?
Right, yeah. So it's, there's thousands of farms.
Yep.
The reality is, going back to my advice would be that the council needs to look at the water bodies that really need attention, because they are real issues, and the evidence is there, and deal with those in a systematic way. So there's some common sense to be applied. So I think the resources need to be allocated where the problem's the biggest problem, which is evident. And then it's fair to say, yes, I guess there is a question around resourcing, which we're going to have to get to.
If I might just expand a little bit on that, the practical effect of the recommendations that are in front of you, and in particular to defer the commencement date, is very little, other than avoiding a whole lot of unnecessary discharge consents that present problems. Inherent in the proposal is a replacement for a significant number of those rules in March of next year, which is before the other rules of 6A would have come into effect anyway. So that is significant. My sense is we can expect no worse environmental outcomes as a result of the decision today than would have happened over that period anyway. And in terms of resourcing and approach, we've been working actively internally with the rural liaison team as to how to ensure that the messages and approach that they have with landowners reinforces the key messages that there is no change here to the prohibited activity rules, that we continue to enforce those and to be active in the way in which we respond to those, and to start the
the messaging that will follow about the direction of that's coming nationally around farm environment management plans and other things, we will need to look at how much more resources need to be devoted to that. And the last thing I'd say is this will all fit into the national discussion and the government's new version of the NPS for freshwater management and a new national environmental standard, which means it will play into a quite significant national conversation that will drive awareness of the need for change and the need for improvement of water quality in particular. And that will help us work with the community of Otago on what will be a reasonable journey that needs to be taken over a short period of time if we are to meet the obligations that the government has got in the pipeline.
Yeah, just thank you. I think your question was actually on how are we going to communicate to wider community was where we started from. And it's a good point. And appended at the back is a communications plan. So it is quite specific, I suppose, to 6A stakeholders and, and then moving perhaps into some others on the second plan change. But I guess we do need to think as a council, before we go into too much detail, about the broader picture of where we're heading with water, which is really important to all communities. So I guess that's where Councillor Lawton was coming from. It's actually back to basics of, okay, everyone, where we're at. This is, 2019, and this is our direction for water. Which is going to be different to when we set 6A, and getting that across to community and taking them on the journey is a big thing. But I know Ms Gardner as well wanted to comment.
So I think just in terms of resources, I think we have, up until now, we have had the resources that we need to do the work that's in front of us. This presents us with some new challenges, and we need to think about that. But I think it's really important that we remember that this work is not the sole responsibility of our rural liaison team. They have a really key part to play, but in fact we have, not necessarily from an FTE point of view, but we have about 205 or so staff at the moment. And every one of those staff has been briefed in some way on 6A and the changes that are being made and has key messages, so that it becomes an organisation-wide conversation, not just relying on four rural liaison officers. But there are compliance staff who are on properties each day, there are biosecurity staff who are on properties, we have our environmental monitoring staff. And so this is about being joined up as an organisation and being able to talk about our business in a much broader sense. So, yes, there might be some pockets where we need to invest in some more resourcing, not because of the work we've got on our plate as of this moment, but because of the work that's coming that we don't know about yet. And that might be in a number of areas. But it's also about using the resources we have in the best way possible as well.
Yeah, I guess the message about a comprehensive communications plan would be really where we're at, rather than too specific. Yep, okay. We've got Councillor Laws next.
Yes, I guess all this is slightly moot, isn't it, this discussion, because we're going to be waiting for that new national policy statement. And it's going to very much set the groundwork of what we're going to be doing. So we're sort of just in a little bit of limbo, although given an apropos and earlier conversation, we're not going to have to wait very long. So that's good. But I just wanted to pick up, Stephen, on this effects-based stuff, because it seems to me that effects-based, if it's not dead, it's dying. And that is not necessarily as a result of any changes this council's making, Stephen, but as a result of the national policy statements becoming much more prescriptive about what regional councils will do. And I'm interested in exploring, we're putting this out there now, we're going to approve this today, fair enough, But in a month's time, we'll know, is a month, roughly?
About a bit.
Yeah. Month or so? We'll know roughly what the national policy statement is, and we'll have some, listen, without breaking any confidence, it's already been publicly notified amendments to the Resource Management Act. So, and they are going to be soon too. I'm just asking, are we doing this a bit early? Because you don't, well, see, I the date is fine, but if we're going to consult on this, aren't we going to have to update our information in the next 4 to 6 weeks to encompass those changes?
Pay down.
So if I may respond, in terms of shifting the effective date of the 6A policies, in my view, we have no choice, and we need to do that before you leave office.
It's the second part.
In terms of the second part, if there are such significant changes in the NPS and NES that means we need to pause for thought about the timing or the process, then clearly that's what the council will need to do, and we'll have a very clear idea of that very soon. But the one thing that we can be absolutely certain of from government is an expectation that we will do, we will move far faster than this council has in the past and address wholesale change to the way in which water is managed across Otago as they are expecting it to be managed across the rest of New Zealand in a very short period of time. So, yes, we need to be wise and we need to do things in the right sequence. All of the national direction will be about doing it faster.
Well, okay, but that leads me to the next one. Are we expecting farm environment plans to be part of the national policy statement on freshwater management? Because I note that we've got, gee, including your old regional council, is making it now mandatory in most of the regional water plans that you have farm management plans. And I'm thinking to myself, this is likely to be a part of any plan change that we make.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the answer to that is yes. Yes. It's highly likely to come through the MPSFM revision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is a course of direction, and it's fair to say that the course of direction across a number of regional councils is to those plans ahead of the MPSFM. So that's the point. But I think the timing issue, and this is probably important, is that I think even if you look at the MPSFM changes and some of the requirements about timing, it'll still be about a 5-year period before they've got effect in terms of the regional plan architecture at the best opportunity, given the plan development process and the notification process and the hearing process. So what I would say is that is still an argument for saying do really practical things. And the one that really sticks out like a sore thumb to me is dairy effluent ponds. Dairy, you know, it's such a basic thing that with such basic standards the industry agrees to require that quickly sits in the no-brainer category. Do it now. Don't wait 5 years, yeah. Sort of stuff. So, and similarly, I'd say the same thing with urban sediment rules. Actually, yeah.
Well, and that's the final question. The wastewater in here.
Yeah.
I'm particularly thinking of urban wastewater.
Right.
Because, I mean, if we're going to be fair and equitable here, it's time we started to address that issue. Are we intending to beef that up in our plan change? Is that the idea?
So
in terms of wastewater, we have two matters. There's a matter of septic tanks, density of septic tanks, and transitioning some communities towards wastewater treatment plants. That's very much related to our rules, and it requires a really good understanding of the receiving environments. And I think that in that case, we are better off being more locally specific, and then that means waiting for the FMU processes to be completed so that we really have fit-for-purpose rules for septic tanks.
So is the answer no?
And the other, well, the answer is no for septic tanks. If you are talking about wastewater treatment plants and discharges to wastewater treatment plants, they are already consented.
We can and we will reinforce the discharge policy through this plan change. I don't know how far we will go and we will be able to go for wastewater treatment, municipal wastewater discharges, but we will reinforce the discharge policies to better, to strengthen our policy direction and consenting on wastewater and urban discharges.
Okay, right, my list. I've got Bow, Alison, Scott and Kempton, so I've got all you, but Councillor Bow next.
Yeah, I think, Madam Chair, a lot of my questions have possibly been asked and answered, but I was up again at 4 a.m. this morning going through a lot of this, and I guess with maybe coming back to where the next steps are and B, where I've said here on a bit of paper, where are the rules and how effective will they be when they're put to the community for the second plan change? You know, I guess I need to know if the new stuff is better than the old stuff. And I'm not sure whether this report actually gives me that confidence of knowing it, but is that what happens for that second stage?
Yes. I think the answer is without having done the detailed work on what the new rules are, we can't give you that assurance today. There is a clear direction of travel. The one thing that we can assure you of is that if we don't shift the effective date now, we are likely to end up with a reasonably large number of discharge consents, which will themselves frustrate subsequent plan change processes. And that, and it's important that we avoid that to make sure that we can effectively implement new policy frameworks that deal with water quality more effectively.
And can I just add, Councillor Bell, in terms of the rule drafting, which is the process which will effectively commence post your decision to go down this route, then that's going to be both, there'll be consultation process, clearly. And the council itself will have a number of opportunities to cite the framework and the rules and the effect and ask that very question in a practical way between now and March.
Hey, so, thank you. We better keep rolling. You're finished. Yep, great. Mr. Allison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps I could just report on the brief amount of consultation I've been able to have with our people while they understand the issue and the need for the plan change is they're deeply disturbed by the extension to a deadline, which was clearly signalled many years ago, and disturbed by the slippage, and particularly more thinking about will there be further extensions. Is this just another extension that will lead to another? Particularly given the fact that those of our people who have worked in other areas know the level of work required to achieve the changes you're going to try and do in that 2022, I think it is, plan change. So they're really pretty anxious, really, to be honest, around that. And it's no secret we've ramped up our interest while I'm sitting here and the other activities we've been involved in. We have been watching this play out over many years, so we are strongly supportive of the NPS, so we think the wording is will be compliant, not sort of compliant. I've heard said today it will be compliant. That's the objective, and I expect is what's intended, and so we need to be clear in our wording and where we're intending to head. I do have a point of clarification or a question. It's around Schedule 16, and I've read it, and I've actually been doing a fair bit of homework since this has arisen, but I'm still uncertain, and it probably is explainable, how groundwater is accounted for and nutrients in groundwater leaching in through, you know, sometimes it takes 20, 30 years to leach through into rivers, streams and what have you. And I know you've got measuring points there for landowners and what have you to do their own monitoring, and that those are going to be changed perhaps to MCI type measurements and what have you, but it's one area I'm uncertain about is groundwater covered and the nutrient and the impact that groundwater nutrients are having on our waterways.
And I think that goes absolutely directly to some of the ambiguity in the current policy in terms of how you would enforce it, because it's not really clear how it's dealt with, or indeed how you would measure the physiochemical properties of water as it's heading towards a diffuse discharge. And that's part of our thinking behind it would be wise to avoid consents that are based on that approach, because it's very difficult to deal with, and far better to move in the direction that others have moved in their compliance with the NPSFM.
Yeah. The going forward process, to be fair, I think to summarise it, our people's feeling is they've been alienated by the processes, so they want to be involved in the design for farm management plans and the plan change. Which, of course, is that's what's anticipated, but I'm stating that as well.
Really important, and I think very important for us to remind ourselves that we've made a commitment to move forward as partners, and making sure that we're listening to what you're saying now and taking that on board. It's still feeling a bit alienated at this point, and to improve on that, and I guess... worried that we're not doing enough to strengthen in the short term if we're extending the deadlines, and that we need to be thinking about that. So I think that is something we need to be looking at, making sure that it truly is a strengthening, not just an extension of time. I think we all understand, though, that there is going to be a new process and new outcomes. The NPS and the NES and the FMU-driven setting of limits, it's going to be a new water plan, and we don't want to be locked into one that's, say, 10 years old in its development, when we need to be looking towards something as well, and locking in would occur with consents at the moment. So we all understand that. But, Mr. Allison, thank you for bringing that up. And I think, reflecting on what others have said as well, this needs to be stronger, and we need to be really clear in our communications to community that that's what it's about. Yep, it's not being more lenient. Right, we have got other people here, and Councillor Scott, thanks for your patience.
That's fine. Madam Chair, I've been waiting 6 or 7 years to get used to patience. I sympathise with Edward, in terms of, the hurt. I think there's a bit of hurt from everybody in the community to some degree. This water plan, when it first came into effect... 6 years ago or something like that, and immediately the prohibited activities came into effect, so it's been actioned. The settlement rules came into effect, so that was actioned, and then we went through this big transition in terms of Schedule 16, in terms of limits, in terms of the discharges from the land and the overseer. And here we are at D-Day, and it's been delayed. And I understand, after going through it and thinking about it, that what it's all about is making the plan fit for purpose. So I suspect not only have we been through a transition time, it's been an appropriate time to take a deep breath and so forth. But myself personally, I have four bottom lines, and the first one, Madam Chair, you've already talked about, is strengthening. Are we truly going to strengthen this plan? And we've talked about in here, for example, effluent management, sediment, stock access. I think there's a bit of work still to go in to make sure that we get that right. And I'm hoping, Ms. Gardner, that's the case. And with consents, I mean, it's a relief that the plan is going to be more robust to be able to handle consents. My second bottom line is, and I think we've all got this, is to align effectively with the national policy statements, environmental standards, this type of thing. So strengthen, align. The third one is actually to keep some momentum going so that the people out on the land continue to care, to water test, and to take some individual responsibility. So let's keep that momentum. And also, just finally, my word is certainty. And I see that Edward's language is starting to tighten up. Well, I think you were talking in relation to the new national policy statement. So the word is certainty is that, and like in the article on the Saturday Fish and Game, where their second last paragraph, what the CE for Fish and Game said is that landholders need certainty in how rules would be implemented. And that's what we're talking about here today. And the community needed certainty the environment would be protected and meaningful progress was being made towards improving water quality. So they are my bottom lines. I'm only going to support it if we're genuinely moving forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I don't have any doubt as to the huge amount of work that's gone into working up a proposition that's got some legs for moving forward, and I'm very pleased to see that. I guess that the first point that I would make, and I guess it relates to Mr. Allison's comments, is that the three-year slippage, shall we call it, the three-year delay, in my view, in practical terms, will have not an ounce of impact on water quality over that period. It will be no worse than if the 2020 rule came in, rather if the 2020 date was stuck to, simply on the basis that we do not have the practical scientific methods to be able to measure Schedule 16, and we will still therefore be relying on the gross effect prohibited activities. I think that's the, in practical terms, that's where we're at. The question of effects-based is quite an interesting one, really. One of the things that always concerned me, and we're going back now nearly 10 years, right from when I came onto this council, well, first of all, the effects-based thing was so elegant. And and I was certain there was going to be some science that meant you could stick your waratah in the ground with something on the end and you'd be able to do this measuring. And that was a long time ago. Now, that hasn't happened, okay? And we just have to accept that that hasn't happened. On the other hand, though, we've still got the problem of being able to reasonably predict the water quality response to prescribed practice. That's the really hard issue that I thought that science and the elegant thing would overcome. But if I could just run this through a little bit further. On the other hand, though, I think what it means is that we have to rethink a little bit, and I know this isn't part of this here, rethink a little bit about how we set up a state of the environment monitoring program. Whether or not we start to set that up more around farming practice and soil types and things, and other people will have lots and lots of expertise about that that I haven't got. So you set that up quite differently, and that's what still gives you, and a more finer grained, that's what still gives you the effects-based regime, because then you can, if you like, isolate parts of your region and say, we seem to have something going on here, let's have a look. We seem to have an effect that we haven't got in other places. So I think that's quite important. So there's just some thoughts that I really just put into that mix. But the last thing is that just in terms of the comms plan, I don't think we're pushing the prohibited activity being at the core of the 2020 to 2023 period. I don't think we're pushing that hard enough. And I think that if all of the stakeholders could see compliance work relating to the gross activities over that period rise, that may allay some fear that things are going to go backwards and downhill. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, there's some questions there, I think, things you might like to comment on. But there's also the ORC will continue, and recommendation three, ORC will continue its education and enforcement program. I wonder if what you're suggesting is actually strengthen some things.
Push that up a little bit in the columns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah, so Peter might, Peter should probably comment on the compliance enforcement piece, not me. Having said that, I think, Councillor Kempton, you are right. There's a systemic improvements in water quality are often take the cumulative. In other words, you need to be at a sufficient scale in the landscape for sufficient time to drive that. With some exceptions, clearly where you've got a point source discharge, you've got an immediate discharge from a particular activity like a dairy effluent pond, which I sort of keep harking back to, it's a bit of a no-brainer to sort that out. But fundamentally, it's a long-term game. Now, there is evidence elsewhere in New Zealand where there's been systematic activity around the landscape with physical interventions in the farm management system and in the landscape, you know, for example, in Taranaki's the high-profile case with its riparian program. So there are measurable, definite improvements in that particular case, but it's been a 17 to 18-year journey. And I think that's a sort of a strategic issue for ORC in core catchments where there's where that's the sort of time, it's that scale that the organisation needs to be thinking about. And it does translate back to its state of environment monitoring program, frankly, both. And that's yet another thing that needs to be thought about quite actively. I mean, I would be saying, and I know that with the science teams moved to this, is that monitoring of ecological health is now being blended into the SOE framework more actively. Great. Having said that, I think, Julie, you raised it the other day, having some capacity in the land science area is really quite important. So that conversation is going to come.
Thank you.
All right.
I think the whole FMU process as well is kind of effects-driven, isn't it? So you're all in one catchment, and we're looking at what we value, we're setting objectives and limits, and it doesn't really matter if you're an industry, a town, or a farmer, actually. We're having a look at you from a high scale of what the community actually wants to see. So there's sort of a fundamental premise of effects-based still that will come through. Right, there was someone next after that, Councillor Noon.
Thanks very much, Madam Chair. Just speaking in support of the two motions, or three motions that are on the table, the first point I just want to make is with regards to whatever iteration of the NPS FM and NES that's current, we have a duty to adhere under the RMA to whatever iteration is out there. So we can't second guess what the Minister's going to do in the future, but we do know we've got to comply with the current NPS. Second point I just wanted to make was that the farming sector, and you must also say the rural and urban sector, are moving towards, in the water space, a more of a regulatory regime because of the challenges we've got ahead of us. And I'd be sticking my neck out, but I think both communities are ready for the challenge. And I imagine there's a sigh of relief, as Councillor Scott has said, with the liaison staff and the compliance staff when they look at the list of strengthening the plan change in March, the list that's in this paper here, that will give them far greater certainty and ability to be able to do their job where historically, because of the ambiguous nature of the plan. So this is going to be a win-win-win across the board. So more than happy to support the recommendations.
Is there anyone who hasn't spoken who wishes to do so? Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I concur actually with a lot of people who've said a lot of really good things, and I think we have to carry on, and I look at the liaison staff here today, and it's nice to see Craig Simpson here from Catchments. Thank you for coming. You guys have done a lot of work that we haven't probably, you know, been so privileged to see, but you sort of see it when you go out and have days with you people. You see that beef and lamb, you people are there. You people are there when the farmers want to know a question. They want to know about their land management plans. You guys are there, and we must keep on with it. So thank you, and I support this too.
Anybody else care to say anything? Okay, well, I think it would be appropriate to thank those in the community who have been on this journey with us to this point and have been investing heavily in ensuring that we do see progress towards improved rural water quality. We are on a journey, and we need to see further improvements in many catchments, and that's the journey that we're on together. I wonder whether we do want to change recommendation 3. We've got a mover and a seconder to strengthening. We always understood as a council that come 2020 we would be amping up again our compliance and probably education as well, ensuring that it's another step on the journey with 6A. So I think we've reflecting what Mr. Allison and a lot of others have said, if this is a strengthening stage, we need to be strengthening rather than just continuing on. We've got improvement to make and we need to do it now. We don't want to wait another 5 years. So that would be my thoughts. I support this as well, and I'm about to put the recommendation, but wondering if anybody else supports the strengthening rather than continuing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Councillor Woodhead, did you want to speak on that as the mover?
Really happy to change the wording of recommendation 3. I'd be interested if Mrs. Gardner has some comfort with that. We need to deliver on these recommendations.
Yes, I do have some comfort with that. I'm just flagging to you that I may very well be coming back to you to have a conversation about funding.
Sorry, could you do that again? So that's recommendation 3.
Change from continue to strengthen.
Oh, I see. We'll strengthen its education and enforcement. Okay. Yep. All right, I'm happy to move the recommendations, including that change.
Councillor Woodhead and Hope, I will put it. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much. And that brings Policy Committee to a close. Thank you to all staff for attending and members of the public.